This is Church Alive's Teaching of the Week. For additional teachings or information about the church, go to churchalive.net.
We are going to continue our series on the Christmas family tree. Pastor Nolan last week was talking about, on our first series, he was exploring Jesus's genealogy and how God works through imperfect and dysfunctional families to bring hope and redemption to the world. So today we're going to continue looking at the family tree, specifically looking at one portion of it. So last week, Pastor Nolan was in Matthew chapter 1, and it was like, so-and-so begot so-and-so, and so-and-so had this kid, and this and that, and it was like 14 generations. And so I'm going to spare you with some of that today. But if you will, open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 1, and I'm just going to read verse 4 and 6. So I'll just kind of condense it there. So Ram, the father of Amminadab, the father of Nahshon, the father of Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab, Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. So historically, normally in genealogies, you leave out the women's names, and you just mention the men's name because the men actually carry on the lineage. They carry on the bloodline. So it's very uncommon to use a female's name, but we see in this passage that Obed's mother was specifically named Ruth. So has to be some detail in there for that to be the case. So today we're going to be talking about the story of Ruth and how it fits into the family tree of Jesus and how God worked through Ruth's life and how God is at work in our lives today. And so first we're going to unpack Ruth and I'll share a couple of takeaways kind of at the end that I think will apply to you and I. And so in Ruth chapter 1, I said, let me kind of set the stage here. So do we have any movie fans in here? Like any action? Yeah, good. Okay. Come on. We got two people. Only two people in some action or some thrillers or anything like that. What about some romantic comedies like a rom-com or some romantic tragedies like the Titanic or something like that, right? Okay. We got a Titanic fan. Okay. So today we're gonna kind of go on like a rom-com, but it's not like a comedy. It's actually reality. So it's like a, romantic reality. And so I'm a visual learner. I'm ADD, so I might jump around and everything like that. But I like to see things. And so today, what I want to do is if I was going to make a movie about Ruth, I would cast three individuals. And those three individuals will be Matthew McConaughey, will be our Don Juan Boaz. You can't have a rom-com without Matthew McConaughey, right? Right? So we got Gal Gadot, she's going to be Ruth. We got Maggie Smith, she's going to be Naomi. She just looks like a good Naomi, right? So when I'm talking today, kind of to help you visualize and conceptualize it, that you can see whenever I name, you can look at these individuals here, okay? So let's get started. So in Ruth chapter 1, let me add a little context here. So there was the book of Judges. And so during the time Judges was written, it was a hard time. There was no king or anything like that. And so what you were supposed to do is just live your life however you see that was honoring or fit. And so you get 16 chapters of straight just carnage, of just death and destruction. And so it was bad. So Judges was a dark time in Israel. And so Ruth chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi, Maggie Smith. And the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem and Judah. And they went to Moab to live there. So basically a man and his wife and his two boys, they leave the promised land. They leave Bethlehem because there's a recession, there's a famine, they're starving. And they leave, there's like an economic downturn. And so they leave the promised land to go to Moab. And Moab, and they called them the Moabites that lived there, were the enemy of God's people. They were the enemy of God's people. So Elimelech and his family pick up and they leave the promised land and they go to Moab. And so Moab, the Moabites, were even worshiping foreign gods. And they even believed in child sacrifice. So just total, just disregard and disobedience from leaving the promised land to go to Moab. And so in the Hebrew translation, Chilion, Mahlon, actually translates to in Hebrew to sick and tired. So sick and tired, and Elimelech and Naomi, Maggie Smith, they move and they live and they move to Moab. So we pick up chapter 3. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, Maggie Smith, died. And she was left with her two sons. They married a Moabite woman, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. And then after they had lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. So early on in the story, we've already got some tragedy. You're right? And in a rom-com, it's like, oh man, there's the tearjerker, right? Her husband and her two sons, they pass away. And so back in those days, the custom were that your children, there was no 401k, there was no retirement plan or safety net or anything like that. What they had was is you had your sons or your children were supposed to take care of you. And now Naomi did not have that. So tragedy strikes. She doesn't have anything, but she has her two daughters-in-law. She's got Orpah, which kind of sounds like Oprah, but she's got Orpah. And she's got Gal Gadot, Ruth, right? And so I'm just paraphrasing here. So Naomi is like, hey, look, I've been through enough here in Moab. I'm going back. I'm going back to Bethlehem. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go back. And you two girls, y'all are still young, and go live your life. Basically, just leave me alone. I'm going to go back. I came to your land. Y'all can stay here, but I'm going back. And they're both, Ruth and Orpah are like, no, we'll stay with you. And she insists, Naomi insists, Maggie Smith's like, please leave, go. And so Orpah's like, you know what? All right. So she kisses her, gives her a kiss, and she's like, all right, peace out. I'm gone. Yeah, she leaves. She leaves. And guess what? We don't hear about Orpah anymore. She leaves. And then Ruth says, no, I'm not going to leave you. She clings to Naomi. She clings to Naomi. And she says in verse 16, but Ruth replied, don't ask me to leave you or turn your back. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us. Right? I mean, that's a strong scripture. She's like, no, I'm not going to leave you. I know you don't have anything. Why would I leave you now? So she doesn't leave, and she clings to her. And so now they're a package deal. So if you see Ruth, if you see Gal Gadot, you see Maggie Smith, right? They're a package deal. So you can imagine them like walking around and be like, oh, Ruth, who's that lady? Is that your mom? So nice to meet you. She's like, no, that's not my mom. Oh, is that just like your neighbor, your friend? No. That's my dead husband's mom. That's my dead husband's mom, right? And so they're a package deal. Verse 22. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by her daughter-in-law, Ruth, the young Moabite woman. Really twisting the knife. They're like, she's a Moabite. The enemy of the people of God. The young Moabite woman. They arrived in Bethlehem in late spring at the beginning of the barley harvest. So to kind of save a little bit of time and kind of add some context, when they get back to Bethlehem, everybody's super excited. Everybody's elated to see Naomi. It's been 10 plus years. They're like, Naomi, it's, oh my gosh, girl, it's so good to see you. Oh my gosh, who's this? Who's this? And she's like, oh, this is Ruth. And it's so good to be back. Oh my gosh, it's so good to see you. And Naomi's like, no. She's like, no. She was like, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Because I am bitter. Mara translates to bitter. Naomi actually means sweet. She was like, nothing is sweet about my life. We leave the promised land, and I go with my husband, and he passes away, and my two sons. I don't have anything now. Nothing is sweet about my life. Call me bitter. Call me Mara. So she says, she wants to change her name. She says, call me Mara. So they set up in town, Ruth and Naomi, Maggie Smith and Gal Gadot. They set up shop. They find a place to live and stay. And they find them a house and they say, man, I'm actually kind of hungry. You know, we've been traveling for so long. Let's go get something to eat. And so in chapter 2, verse 2, it says, one day Ruth, the Moabite, they're adding that again. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go out into this harvest field to pick up the stalks of grain left behind by anyone who was kind enough to let me do it. Naomi replied, all right, my daughter, go ahead. So Ruth went out to gather grain behind the harvesters. And as it happened, she found herself working in a field that belonged to our Don Juan, Matthew McConaughey, Boaz. Boaz was the relative of her father-in-law, Elimelech. While she was there, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you, he said. The Lord bless you, the harvesters replied. Then Boaz asked his foreman, who is that young woman over there, and who does she belong to? So I would figure if we got any, like, friends, fans in the house, like, that would be, like, Joey would be like, hey, how you doing? What's up, girl? Hey, how you doing? Right? He's like, man, who? Right? He's asking his foreman, hey, man, who is that over there? I haven't seen them before. Who is that? Right? And so you could tell in this context that Boaz is actually pretty well-liked, right? So in the morning, do we got any, like, grumpy grouches in the morning? When you go to work, okay. When you go to work, someone's like, hey, good morning. I am a morning person. I'm like, man, as soon as I wake up, I'm like, hey, what's up? Hey. Some of my coworkers are like, I need coffee before I can talk to you, right? So you can be like, you know, present day, you're like in your cubicle or something like that. And Boaz says, you know, the Lord be with you. And like the harvesters, your coworkers, your boss is saying that. And you're like, oh yeah, the Lord bless you, right? So Boaz seems like he's pretty well liked. And so he tells Ruth, hey, get as much as you want. If you're thirsty, I will give you something to drink. I will take care of you. And I've already told my harvesters to let you get whatever that you want in the fields or anything. So it skips down a little bit. And we actually kind of get to see their first date. So it says that they actually had bread, oil, and vinegar. They kind of sat there and like, hey, how you doing? Where are you from? You know, kind of eating at like, you know, Olive Garden. You know, it's like some bread and some vinegar, right? And so you almost kind of see their first date. So in verse 10, it says, Ruth fell at his feet and thanked him warmly. What have I done to deserve such kindness? She asked. I am only a foreigner. Yes, I know, Matthew McConaughey replies. Or Boaz. Boaz is like, yeah, I know. But I also know about everything that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. I have heard how you left your father and your mother in your own land to live here amongst complete strangers. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you have done. Skipping down a little bit, he actually, he tells the harvesters, he's like, hey, look, get whatever she wants. And he tells the harvesters, hey, look, go to the storage house and get her as much as you can. And so in the text, it actually says she gets like 40 pounds of grain, and she goes back to Naomi because they didn't have anything. They didn't have any food. And so she brings it back to Naomi. And in verse 20, may the Lord bless him, Naomi told her daughter-in-law. He is showing his kindness to us as well as to your dead husband. That man is one of our closest relatives and one of our family redeemers. So I'm going to talk about a family redeemer. Before I get there, back in the Levitical law, and the custom back in the day was that you almost had this kind of provision, this almost welfare system where the farmers would go out and farm, but they had to leave a certain percentage of their crops or their grain on the ground. That way people that were traveling or less fortunate people like Naomi and Ruth could come by and get some food. And so it was like a welfare system for them to be able to go grab some provisions and to eat. And so the redeemer means that you could actually, in the family lineage, you have a redeemer that somebody could step in. If somebody, a female was of childbearing age, and if her husband had died and she was a widow or something, that she would still have an opportunity to have a child to continue the family legacy. And so we see it right here when Naomi says he is one of our closest relatives and he is one of our family redeemers. God established that a widow could have a succession plan. For who had the right to step in and to marry to keep the bloodline going? So basically, Naomi, when she says he is one of our closest relatives and he is our family redeemer, she's like, oh my gosh, girl, we got a chance. Okay? We got a chance. He's your Boaz. He could potentially be your boo thing. I could kind of see it. This is it. We got a shot. We got a chance, right? And so in chapter 3, we actually get to see how Naomi, Maggie Smith, starts setting the plan in motion. She's like, all right, girl, come here. All right, you're going to get dressed. First, you got to take a shower. So you're going to take a shower, you're going to get dressed, and you're going to put some perfume on, and you're going to put some nice clothes on, and then what you're going to do is you're going to go where he's working, you're going to go to the threshing floor, and you're going to lay at his feet. You're going to move the cover, and you're going to lay at his feet, okay? And she's like, oh my gosh, like, do I stink or something? I got to, like, take a shower, and, like, I got to change, and I got to lay at his feet, and, like, what's going on? Like, is this going to work? And she's like, Naomi's like, trust me, this will work. So I'm going to say this, hang on, girls, like, if you're single in here, okay, I'm not saying, like, this will work, okay? This was just the custom at that time, so I'm not a matchmaker, I'm not a guru, I'm just reading the text, okay? So if you're single, I don't know, but, you know, don't clean up and do some things, okay? But Boaz, so Boaz was sleeping. He'd been working all day and in the fields, and he was at the threshing floor, and he was sleeping. And so in verse 9, we see, he says, who are you? He asked. Boaz like, whoa, who are you? Who's at my feet? Like, I'm just waking up. It's dark. I'm startled. Who is this? I am your servant Ruth, she replied. Spread the corner of your covering for me, for you are my family redeemer. She's basically saying, if you like it, you can put a ring on it. Okay? That's basically what she's saying. Okay? And so, any good story, any rom-com or anything like that, we talk about tragedy and everything, but there's always a problem. There's always a problem. And so the problem was, is there was actually the redeemer, the kinsman redeemer, there was actually somebody closer in the succession line than Boaz. So we had a problem. So Boaz goes out into the city, and it just so happens, or as it happens, Boaz goes and he sees the family member, the next one in line. And he's like, hey, we don't get his name or anything like that. But he's like, hey, so, you know, like Naomi, like Elimelech. And he's like, yeah. He was like, you know, he passed away. Yeah. He's like, well, you're next in line. Are you interested in acquiring the property and the land and everything like that? And at first, this guy that we don't get his name, at first he's like, I think so. And he's like, well, you know, you got to like marry that girl, that Moabite. You got to marry her too. You got to marry that Ruth, because Naomi and her are like a package deal. And so he's kind of like, you know, she's kind of homely. Like, I don't know if you're still interested or not. And it just so happens, he initially says yes. And he ultimately says, you know what? No. I'm good. I don't want the land. I don't want to have to marry anybody. I'm good. So he turns it down. And so Boaz gets to marry Gal Gadot. Matthew McConaughey, right? Boaz gets to marry Ruth. Verse 9 and 10 says, then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing around, you are witness that today I have bought from Naomi all of the property of Elimelech, Chilion, Mahlon. And with the land I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son and carry on the family name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You are all witnesses today. Verse 13, it says, so Boaz took Ruth into his home and she became his wife. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant and she gave birth to a son. Verse 17, it said, the neighbor woman said, now at last Naomi has a son again. And they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. What an amazing story. Of all the twists and the turns and just just so happens, right? What a great story, because if they didn't have Obed, we wouldn't have the lineage. We wouldn't have Jesus, right? We wouldn't have King David. Such an amazing story. Ruth had to marry her kinsman redeemer to keep the bloodline going. Her life and her story and her struggles, they all happened for all of us. And our own redeemer was born into the world. And earlier I talked about the two takeaways. And so the one thing I want you to take away today is God is at work in the details. God is sovereign, and he is always working in the details of my life, Ruth's life, and your life. He's always working in the details. It just so happened that that was Boaz's field that Ruth came. It just so happened that Boaz left the provisions on the ground. And the harvesters did too. It just so happened that Boaz was single and he did all these different things. It just so happened that the guy that had the first right of refusal turned it down and didn't want to take the property and didn't want to marry Ruth. It just so happened, or just has happened, right? And so God is working in the details. And it's not by happens chance. He's orchestrating everything, every single detail. Amen. And you might say, Tyler, what do you mean? In Psalm chapter 139, verse 13 to 14, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Matthew 10, verse 29 to 31. What is the price of two sparrows and one copper coin, but not a single sparrow can fall to the ground without your father knowing it. And the very hairs on your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are more valuable to God than a whole flock of sparrows. And in Acts, for one man, he created all of the nations throughout the whole earth. He decided beforehand when they should rise and fall, and he determined their boundaries. It's not happenstance that you were born when you were, and you are where you are right now and in 2025. It's not by happenstance. God cares about the details. Several weeks ago, I was upstairs talking with the youth. We were in John chapter 2 and at the wedding at Canaan. And I was saying that Jesus was with his mom. He's a mama's boy. I'm a mama's boy too. And so if Jesus was ever going to kick off his inaugural ministry, you would think it would be healing somebody from blindness or healing a leopard or raising somebody from the dead. No. The first recorded miracle was turning water into wine. Jesus even cared about the catering at a wedding. He's all about the details. He was in the details of Ruth's story all along, and he's in the details of our lives too. The second takeaway that I have today is God is at work when it doesn't look like it. Yes. God is at work when it doesn't look like it. There was a famine. They left. There was sorrow at every turn for Naomi. She even says, don't even call me Naomi. Don't call me sweet. Call me bitter. Call me Mara. God is at work when it doesn't even look like it. Several years ago, about two years ago, I had a customer. He lived in Alabama. He worked for the University of Alabama. And my dad and I were big LSU fans. And so he was like, hey, do you guys want to come to the game? We got a big game. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So my dad and I go, and he gave us these little lanyards for like the hospitality tent. Like when you first get there, you can take a picture with Big Al, the elephant, and everything like that. And so we got there and kind of tailgate beforehand. And so I left my little lanyard on. And so we had our tickets and we go into the stadium, Brian Denny Stadium. And we go and we're like, wow, this place is huge. And so they were warming up and stuff. And so we got right up next to the fence and we just kind of sat there. And we were on LSU sideline and they're warming up and they're punting the balls and everything like that. And we're just like, man, these are great. Let's just chill here. So we stayed there all the way to about halftime. And I was like, I told my dad, I was like, you want something to drink or something like that? He's like, yeah, give me a Coke and some M&Ms. And I said, okay. So I go out to the concourse. I look to the right, and there was like a long line, and there was like nobody off to the left. And I was like, I'll go left. So I go off to the left, and the concession stand was empty there, and then I had to use the bathroom and stuff. And there was a gate. I could see it was like cracked open, and I was like, oh, okay. So I go back, get my Coke and M&Ms and everything like that, and I was like, I was walking back to go see my dad, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go through this gate. So I go through the gate, and I go, and like Kid Rock is from like from here to there. Like the who's who was there, and I'm sitting down. I'm like, okay, what do I need to do? I need to kind of like fit in. So like I kind of like sit up. I was like, oh, yeah, hey, man, how you doing? So I'll just sit there. And then I've got it all in video. I have all this on video. So like a minute or two later, I hear like this boom, boom. I'm like, man, look. And it's got, you know, the Alabama's coming out of the doors. And so these guys are massive. They're walking from like here to here. Like I could easily give them a high five. And so they're walking by and I was like, okay, how do I get out of here? How do I get out of here now? Cause like I had a jacket on and it was an LSU shirt. You know, I was like, man, I'm in enemy territory. And so like, I kind of like, you know, kind of get my jacket or whatever. I got my lanyard and everything. And so, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to walk out with the team. It's gonna walk out. So they're walking out, and so they go to the right, and I go to the left to the LSU side, and I go over there, and the band's playing. It's called the Million Dollar Band or something like that. They're playing, and so I go over to my dad because he's still next to the fence, and I hand him his Coke and his M&Ms. He's like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And I'm like, I don't know. He was like, well, go over there. Pretend like you belong over there. And I was like, okay. So I go and walk, and I'm on the sideline, and I can see the band. And the band's like, meh, you know, doing their thing or whatever. And it just looks like chaos, right? Like the tuba players running in by like the trombone and this and that. You know, they're just doing all this different stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And so I'd never seen them before. And so like I look up at the Jumbotron, and I'm like, oh, cool. They're doing the little Scarlet A, right? And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And so when I looked up, I could see there was intention and there was detail. And I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. And so what looks like chaos on the ground level and what's in front of us, it looks like there's total chaos and just dysfunction and everybody's running in this and that. But when you look up, it's all orchestrated and it's perfectly designed and it's intricate. I'm like, wow. So there was an intention and there was detail. When it looks like chaos in front of us, God is still at work. In the darkest time in the Bible, in Judges, the first time in the Bible that the word hope is mentioned is in Ruth. There was hope. There was a dark time in Judges, in the book of Judges. God was decorating for Christmas. He was preparing the lineage of his son. And so today, I've got a cake. So does anybody make any like divinity or candy or anything during the holiday season or anything? Do y'all make some cool stuff, right? So you got a cake over here. And so you got some vegetable oil and you've got some butter and some flour here. And if I were to offer you some of these ingredients, just by themselves, you want to take down some vegetable oil in your gullet, probably pretty nasty, right? You put some butter or some flour and stuff. If you had them individually, it'd probably be very bitter. But whenever a master baker can assemble these ingredients, he can make something sweet. Naomi said, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, call me bitter for what God, everything that God has brought me through, call me bitter. And so what is bitter is meant to turn into something sweet. In the hands of a master baker, they can make it sweet. The master bakers at Nothing Bundt Cake are the best. I don't know what you have going on in your life, what bitterness that you have or anything, but he can turn it into something sweet. Amen. One day, we'll see it from above, and everything chaotic and broken that looked to us will be so attention to detail, and we say, oh, God knew what he was doing the whole time. This time last year, Nicole and I were walking through our own dark time. We had just had our second miscarriage. And I don't know why that a perfectly baby, sinless baby had Turner syndrome and that wasn't compatible with life. And in that moment, our life was shattered and we didn't know what we were going to do. And it just looked so chaotic. And we thought God was leaving us, forsaking us. July 31st, 2025, the Lord blessed us with Wells. I don't know if you're going through infertility or divorce, or you just got a diagnosis, or whatever you're going through that makes you bitter, God can weave it into his story and make it into something sweet. whatever we're walking through, is the master maker. This story is about Jesus. This story is indeed about Jesus. First, there was a baby boy born in Bethlehem named Obed. There was also a baby born in Bethlehem as well. His name was Jesus. Does that sound familiar? Boaz is called the Lord of the harvest. Jesus is called the Lord of the harvest. Boaz is the redeemer of the enemy of people of God, the Moabite woman, his own enemy. Boaz was the redeemer, and he brought them in to make them the family of God. And Jesus is the redeemer of all people. Jesus is the redeemer of anyone who trusts in him. Ruth was a foreign Moabite woman, the enemy of the people of God, and she ends up being a great-grandmother of King David. A critical piece to fulfill the lineage of the birth of Jesus. He wove it into the story because he is in the works all the time. God works in the details even when it doesn't look like it. And he can transform anyone that trusts in him, bring them into the family. So again, I don't know what you're walking through, but just know that he's working it out for your good. And that everything is orchestrated. It's not just happenstance. That he's working out everything for your good. And he's going to turn what was meant for bitter into something that's sweet. And he's going to get the reward. So one day, when I'm no longer on this earth, I can see the plan that he had. He said, you don't see it yet, but I'm working it out for the betterment of you. So if we can we bow our heads? Father, thank you for today, Father. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be here and to share this word, Father God. And Father, I pray right now for the people who need a redeemer in their life or their situation right now. That they need a redeemer. For us to be reminded, God is still in the details. And he still cares about the little things that's going on in your life. For us to be rest assured, he is working things out for us, even when it doesn't look like it. He is still working it out. Father, thank you for loving us and thank you for the story. Thank you for that lineage that we can have you be our king, Father, our redeemer. Father, we ask this in your name.
Thank you for listening to the Church Alive teaching of the week. We invite you to join us for our Sunday morning worship service every Sunday at 8:45 or 10:30. Learn more at churchalive.net.